Hello.
Hello.
So, do I sound better?
Yes, you do. In fact, let me put my volume up. Okay. Is your volume up?
Yes, it is.
Oh yeah, I can hear you clear as a bell. Awesome. All right. Let's get this show on the road. You ready?
I'm ready whenever you are.
Okie dokie. What up, kinkers and kinkettes, and welcome to another episode of Kins of Kink, the show where everything and anything is related to kink. I'm the dirtiest pearl in the world, Aja Pearl. And today we're about to talk about a subject that's very personal to me because I am an author as well. I am talking about censoring taboo literature. What's in the actual fuck? I mean, what's next? Who knows what's next? But anyway, joining me in this discussion is a fellow bookstagrammer. She is polyamorous, pansexual, and she loves smut just as much as I do. I consider her a smut, a sister in smut, and at this point. Please welcome my guest, Brandy. How are you doing, Brandy?
I am doing wonderfully, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. So, what's your take on censoring taboo lit? Like, 'cause I'm just appalled by it, but what's your take by it?
I'm appalled as well, I would have to say, because I feel like a lot of us find it to be healing and freeing. In a way that a lot of things in life can't be.
I agree totally because we still live in a society where we cannot even express ourselves freely without being judged. I mean, yes, I understand there's a respect factor there, but there should also be a no judgment factor as well. I agree that there are certain things that should be kept in private. And there are certain things that should be. It's just not a big deal. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I feel like us reading it just like a lot of things that people try to hide behind closed doors isn't hurting anyone else. We're not out here forcing anyone to read what we're reading, just like someone who's a history buff is not shoving history books in my face.
Yeah,
You know, I mean,
unless
I think the only ones I think the only ones who do that are like, religious fanatics sometimes when they like come to your door with like the Bible trying to convince you to go to church,
oh
but like,
God, don't get me started on
I don't know of any group of people who read smut who are going door to door trying to convince other people to live the way we live.
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, you will never see you will never see a dom and a sub on your doorstep saying, "Hey, we would like to convert you to BDSM." You would never, ever, ever, ever see that ever. In fact, when I was introduced to BDSM, it was like I met this girl on TikTok, and she didn't like trying to convince me to join or anything like that. I just really enjoyed her content, and then I met her dom, and he was cool, and then so on. And then I started meeting new people that was in the community, and these are wonderful, wonderful people, and it's all and they are all about respect, all about respect, and I haven't done anything yet, but I did take the infamous test. I don't know if you took the test. Did you take the test?
You know I did.
Okay, before I tell you mine, what was yours?
I'm a sub, 100%.
Okay,
like,
okay, me too.
There is no question.
Okay, I am a sub as well. I am a sub as well. Those who don't know what this test is, it's a standard BDSM test. It's nothing. It just tells you where you stand in the, I guess, on a sexual, how can I put this? The sexual,
like on a scale of like how dominant versus how submissive, and like you can go from being dominant to like being 100% dominant to some people switch.
Right.
Some people are sometimes dominant and sometimes submissive. I personally am submissive. So, yeah, I don't switch. I'm very uncomfortable in being dominant.
Oh, yes, me too. Totally. I mean, I guess it just doesn't fit me, and I don't see, and I'm like, huh. But here's a fun fact. The fun fact is that just because a person is a sub doesn't mean they have less power than a dom. See, the dom has power, but so does the sub. Think of it as two people working for the same company, but with different roles. You know what I'm saying? And it's like no one, and there's a checks and balance in both roles. So nobody like has more power than the other. And speaking of which, I know a lot of authors like myself, as well, you know, indie and traditional, put a lot of BDSM in their literature, and people eat it up and leave no crumbs, none. And let me just add, you know, the really smutty books, they have like these really sweet and loving covers, but when you open it, my goodness, I mean, smut on page after page after page after page, and people love that. They love it. Now, I don't understand. This is how I feel. If you don't like it, don't go near it. Don't buy it. Don't touch it. Don't, you know, it's not hurting you, and it's not harming you, and it's not harming your family. So what's the big deal? Like, enough of living in this cookie cutter wholesome society. You know, enough of that. But what's your take on that, Brandy?
It's like the Stepford Wives. They want to seem perfect, and they don't want any of the nasty bits like hanging out for other people to see. And they feel like books, I mean, some of the covers can get a little racy, and I guess, I don't know. I don't understand it personally, because if what we do or anyone else doesn't affect someone else, then it shouldn't be a big deal. It really shouldn't. We were raised in a society, I know I'm personally a millennial, so we were raised in a society of...
I'm Gen X, by the way.
You're not allowed to say anything, and you're Gen X?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. I'm borderline, I guess. I was 85, so it's like...
Okay, I'm 80, so I'm like on the tail end of Gen X.
Yeah. So, and it's just... We didn't talk about things like this, and so the older generation doesn't understand it. And I feel like it's a lot of older people who are probably like, no, I'm not reading that, and you shouldn't either. And I've never understood that.
Let me tell you something about the older generation, okay? The older generation, and mind you, and what's so ironic is that these are the same people that would read Jackie Collins, Daniel Steele, Sidney Sheldon, because had it not been for those women, they ran so that we can walk. Okay, let's keep it all the way real. Y'all was reading these nasty, trashy novels, because that's what y'all call them, trashy novels, while y'all was washing clothes or doing whatever. I mean, y'all was all into it. It was like a soap opera on paper in a book. and mine, and now these are the same people that saying, oh, no, that can't be on no bookshelf. Really? Really? Stop it.
Yeah, this is the same generation that, like, just, okay, like, my mother's generation. These are people who have gone to Lover's Lane with me, who have bought things from there in front of me that they should not, that I should not have to see. Mm-hmm. But my book is going to be a problem. Come on. Really? Really?
I
don't know. I find the books, like, it takes, like, books with trigger warnings. Honestly, the more trigger warnings, the more I'm likely to buy it.
Yeah.
Because it, when I'm reading it, it's like I can identify with this character based on some of our shared trauma or anything like that. It makes me feel a little bit stronger. It makes me feel a little bit more whole.
Right.
And it heals me in a way that therapy and talking to friends and time couldn't do. You know, all of these things weren't healing this trauma, but this, I mean, this is for me. This makes me feel not alone.
And you bring up a good point. You bring up a really good point, because even though these books are taboo, the characters are relatable. See, these characters have undergone multiple has undergone trauma, and that's what makes them relatable. But they also have a high sexual appetite, which is, I don't know if because for me, that's me right there. Like, I've undergone multiple traumatic events, but my sex drive is incredibly high. I don't share this with a lot of people, but I guess now I'm sharing it with the whole world. But at this point, I don't give a damn, because I know that there are some people out there like myself. I'm sure you can relate, Brandy. It's cathartic, it's therapeutic, and you know we gravitate to these characters. We said, yeah, this character is me all the way, or I like her. She's dark. You know, for example, one of the books I'm working on is called The Mark of Medusa. And the main character is a voluptuous character. She's voluptuous, and her name is Angelique Christensen. And Angelique has undergone, she's undergone a lot of criticism and scrutiny because of her weight. And it's from her own parents. Like, her parents wouldn't, like, pack her, like, some really fun stuff to eat. It was, like, something like water and carrot sticks and crackers. And then they would weigh her at the end of the week. I mean, it was just terrible. And they thought that they were helping her, but they were actually abusing her. This is abuse on a child. I mean, and whenever, you know, Angelique would go to the doctor says she's in perfect health. There's nothing wrong with her. But in the parents' mind, it was bad. Like, she was an embarrassment. And as she got older, you know, she developed physically, and then you had this pervert, you know, looking at her and whatnot. And he was a trusted person in the congregation, and he essayed her and got her pregnant. And I don't want to just tell the whole story, but stuff like that, people can relate to. They can relate to being, being obese as a child and going through that scrutiny from adults of why won't you stop eating and all this other stuff.
And being body shamed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But then she meets Oliver, and Oliver loves her the way she is. And Oliver becomes her knight in shining armor, as well as her fellow assassin. And I'm going to put it like that. It's like Kill Bill and Bonnie and Clyde combined. So that's how that is. But people love that. People love that shit. People love dark romance. Like the villain, well, I will burn this fucking world for you. And when a woman or a man hears that from a guy or another woman, it is hot. Like, you would burn this world for me? Oh my God. You know? But yeah.
Yeah, most of us went our whole lives without someone even saying that they would help us stop the school bully from taking our lunch money, much less burn the world. So these books are those people who didn't save us, saving this character who's going through what we went through.
Absolutely.
They're doing the thing that we wish someone did for us.
Totally. And the guy who's morally gray has also went through trauma, but the morally gray guy who we love and adore and who's the perfect, you know, the perfect guy, he's not going to stop the school bully. No, he's not going to beat up this. Maybe he will. Or maybe he'll be like, you know what, while everyone is in school, I'm going to burn the whole school down with everybody in it. Like, damn that, you know, it's not just the bully. It's the teachers who knew that this person was bullying them. It was the kids that laughed and chuckled, and all her so-called friends that didn't say anything and stop anything. Yeah, they're going to get some too. So it's like, wow, you know?
Yeah, it's everything we've always wanted to have, just to a little bit of an extreme, but it's what we need to hear.
And
we need to know that that is possible for someone who's broken, because all of us are broken in some type of way.
Exactly. Totally. Now, tell me, what got you started in reading taboo literature?
Well, my friend Amber, I started reading. I love to read. I'll read almost anything. Except nonfiction. I mean, I'll do memoirs if I care about the person, but I like retellings and reimaginings and things. And my friend, she started reading this book called Butcher and Blackbird. It came out recently. So I'm like new to this. Like, I mean, I read the Sleeping Beauty series by Anne Rice. Mm-hmm. That was very, very taboo back in the day. I still have the original covers where the woman has her breasts out and everything, and they recently redid the covers where they have, like, just roses on the covers, I guess, to make it more acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
But, so I did have those, and then my friend got me into reading Butcher and Blackbird, and then also listening to the Audible book of it.
Ooh.
And I was just like, this is everything that my one partner is kind of like, I'll read these books and I'll see myself, or I'll see one of my partners in it, or I'll see a part of my story in one of them. And it's freeing, and it's just fun, and you get through them so quickly. And it just absorbs you. But I remember the very first ones were that Sleeping Beauty trilogy, which is now four books. I still haven't read the fourth book. And I just remember thinking to myself, like, if my mom knew I had these books, like, the judgment. Lo and behold.
It would be endless.
But, yeah, I loved the sleep, you know, fantasy. She was asleep and woke up to that. It was just like, okay.
Nice.
Like, they went, kissed her awake to he fucked her awake.
Oh, hell yeah.
So.
Okay, now you got me. Okay. Well, that's something I need to read. He fucked her awake. He didn't fuck her to sleep. He fucked her awake. Okay.
Yep.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah. And then he took her back to his kingdom and she became like a sex slave of his. It was an agreement he got into with her father. It was a whole thing. And then eventually she finds her own freedom in one of the common stable boys.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I gotta read. I gotta read that.
That was like back in the day. Like, I don't even remember how old I was, and I found those books at like a Borders to age myself.
You know, you mentioned your partners. Now, tell me, when did you realize that you were pansexual? Did you always know? Did you have to keep it a secret? Because I know, like, when you're young, as young as maybe your preteens, you have to keep that a secret because people will never understand. But what's your experience?
Well, my personal experience is, like, I grew up in the 80s and the 90s, and there weren't all of these words and all of these explanations for how people felt. So I would go through life thinking I liked boys, but then I would meet someone and we'd be great friends and they'd be a girl and I'd wonder what it would be like to kiss them. And I'd think to myself, that's odd, but Then eventually people started talking about being bi and I was like, okay, well maybe that's what I am. But then I'm realizing as I'm walking around that I'm not just looking at this girl because she looks like that or this guy because he looks like that. Everyone I've ever cared about, being pansexual is you don't fall in love with the outside or the appearance. It's who they are on the inside.
Right.
You don't, like they say in Schitt's Creek, it's about the wine, not the label.
Gotcha.
So it's about, you fall in love with who they are as a person. So, like, my partners both do happen to be male. Mm-hmm. But my husband is gender fluid, and my other partner, my boyfriend, is more like, they like to sometimes be female when they feel submissive.
Okay.
But only with another guy. So they don't have a word for that for themselves. They don't, because they grew up when I grew up, we're the same age and everything, they don't really identify as one thing or another, but so I've loved this person since we were 5 years old. Mm-hmm. And then my husband, I've been with him for over 10 years now.
Right.
I couldn't live without either of them because they make me who I am. And I fell in love with each of them for their own personal reasons, their own personality, you know?
Mm-hmm. You said something really interesting, that your boyfriend is he feminine or female when he is sexually, when he gets sexually involved with another guy?
If and when he gets sexually involved with another guy, then he will identify as feminine and he will actually dress as a woman.
Okay.
And play the submissive role. That's how he feels most comfortable. But it takes a very special, very dominant man to bring that out in him.
Okay. So would you say that he's a submissive?
I would say he's a switch.
Okay. Okay. Yeah,
but he leans more heavily towards like a dom, mm-hmm. because that's more what he is with women, with the women in his lives, and where he feels most comfortable. But I don't know how you feel, but like me personally, I'm a control freak everywhere, but the bedroom. So being a submissive is freeing for me. I feel like it's the same for him. He can be very controlling and very much a control freak. And then he'll have those moments.
Okay.
Where he can just let go and feel safe.
Right. And that's right. What, and I think that's what sex is supposed to be. It's supposed to be freeing and supposed to be non-judgmental. You are with this partner or partners because you feel safe with them. You feel comfortable expressing your sexual side to them. Do you know
exactly?
Do you know if he has? Do you know if does he have his own lingerie?
He does.
Okay,
he does. Okay, yes,
that's cool.
He also has like regular, actual clothes to like go out in public in, if they go on an actual date. So it's not just about the sex. It's just freeing in general.
Oh yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree about, you know, I believe that sex is freedom. And, you know, when I'm like crawling on my knees and, you know, whenever I'm on my knees, I just feel like I'm at home on my knees, or I'm like laying across my boyfriend's feet or on his lap, like, you know, like a cat or something. Even though I don't dress like a cat, but I just feel like, you know, like I feel safe, and, you know, I know he won't hurt me and he'll protect me and all this stuff. And I think we all want to feel that way. We want to feel, you know, secure and safe. We don't want to feel like, you know, we have to keep our guard up because we think that we're going to be we're in danger all the time. But yeah, we're talking about all these things that happen to be in these books and what we can relate to, and yet they want to take this away. Like, I'm not understanding. I mean, I'm guessing it's way too rich for your blood. Okay, fine. And I honestly believe it's these dang evil angelicals once again. I mean, it's these hypocritical evil angelicals. I mean, I know they're called evangelicals, but I call them evil angelicals because they are just outright evil. Like, they just want to destroy everything. And what's so crazy is that y'all got, they have graveyards, not skeletons in their closet. They have graveyards in their closet, and yet they want to take this away. Like, I'm not
Yeah, honestly, those are the ones that you always like. They find like 20 bodies buried in the backyard or something. But
for real.
You know what I'm saying? Like, or some flowers in the attic shit. Like, they always have the most skeletons buried. But honestly, it's like anything else in life. Like a movie. If you don't want to watch a superhero movie, don't watch it. If you don't want to watch a porno, don't watch it. If you don't want to read a taboo book, don't read it. Like, it, at no point did we invite you into our world. We don't need you here. We are happy without you.
Right. I mean, you came here on your own free will. We never said get out. You're not welcome. We just looked at you and just went on with our own thing. Like, oh, okay, more people, you know? And you know, we don't care. But if you want to leave, we still don't care. If that's not your cup of tea, don't sip it. That's how I see it.
Exactly. I don't understand why we feel like we have to control everyone around us. What other people do doesn't affect our lives. It really doesn't. In the big scheme of things, you're not going to remember that one book that one person online was reading about or making a reel about. When tomorrow comes or next week, you're not going to remember that. You're going to remember the things that actually affected you.
Absolutely. And let's get back to Flowers in the Attic. B.C. Andrews. Whoo, what a woman. Now, those who don't know who B.C. Andrews is, she wrote books. She wrote the book Flowers in the Attic. Those who who have not read the book, you probably seen the movie. It was filmed in 1987 with Christy Swanson, and I don't want to say she's passed on, but Louise Fletcher, she played the grandmother. Now, V.C. Andrews was all about the incest. Now, I don't do incest. That's just not my jam, and I'm not going to touch that. I'm not going to spread it on my toast. I don't agree with it. So she wrote about incest. She wrote about how in Flowers in the Attic, the mother and the father were actually niece and uncle. She even wrote about how the kids had romantic feelings for each other. I mean, it was just wild. I even saw they did a remake of Flowers in the Attic recently, not recently, but like I think in the mid 2000s.
It was a Lifetime movie.
It was a three-parter. It was Flowers in yep. the Attic, Petals in the Wind, I believe, and the last part. Now, I'm one for the originals, and I'm like, if you can't do a remake better than the original, don't touch it. But they nailed it. They nailed it. And they when they did the second part, they nailed that. And when they did the third part, they nailed that. And then they showed the origin of the grandmother, which was really interesting, on how she became what she was then, what she was before, and this dark and evil person in the end of the book. And then V.C. Andrews, and then they show movies of other books V.C. Andrews did. I don't know why V.C. Andrews chose to write these books about incest, but you know, people like that. People like books like people like incest books. I don't, but you know, teach his own.
Yeah, and I don't remember anyone trying to ban that book back then.
Thank you.
I'm sure they are up in arms about it now, but it was a Lifetime movie, for Christ's sake. I mean, Lifetime is the whole religious Hallmark movies at Christmas type of movies. And then they came out with the special three-part Flowers in the Wind thing.
Mm-hmm.
Flowers in the Attic and Petals in the Wind and all of that. And no one batted an eye.
Nobody.
Lifetime played it right alongside all their other Hallmark movies on a Sunday night, no less, special, because I remember watching it as soon as it aired, because you couldn't help but fall in love with those characters. You couldn't help but root for the children who fell in love with each other. Even if incest wasn't your jam, they were still real characters, and you felt for them, and you loved them, and you wanted them to get a happily ever after everything they went through.
And I think that's why.
And
go ahead, Brandy.
And that's why people love these books and loved those books in particular too, because you know someone like this, or you've heard something like this, or even if it's not exactly like something like that, you're still rooting for these people at your core because you want everyone to be saved in the end.
Absolutely.
You want them to get that happy ever after.
And with the brother and sister, you saw a humane part. You saw them as human. Like, you didn't see them as these sex crazed maniacs that just wanted to fuck each other. No, these were children who were imprisoned by their own mother and grandmother because they were the offspring of an incestual relationship. But that's not their fault. But it's also not their fault that they fell in love with each other either. Like, you can't, like, a person can't help who they fall in love with. It's just the way it is. And you want to know something? Yeah, I'll admit it. I was rooting for Christopher to end up with Kathy. I wanted that. but at the same time, I'm like, wait a minute, they're brother and sister. What are you doing? But you wanted them to be together. It's just like the concept makes my head spin, honestly, but whatever.
Yeah, the concept is not for everyone. I mean, I've dabbled in step brother, step son type of thing, but
I love
that. Not usually like actual incest, but in Flowers in the Attic, I was sold. I read the books. I saw the original. I saw the remakes because these were characters that you could feel for. They weren't just humping like bunnies. They right. were holding hands and comforting each other throughout this hardship that they were both enduring at the hands of people who should have been taking care of them. And who hasn't been betrayed by someone close to them? Who hasn't been the victim of being, you know, bullied or treated poorly or anything by someone that they trusted? I want to see someone point someone out to me, because that person is a rare unicorn.
You want to know something? If you find that person, I want to congratulate them. I want to shake their hand. I want to give them their flowers, you know, because
we are throwing a parade.
What? We are throwing a, we not even a parade. We are throwing a weekend celebration. Okay.
Celebration. Okay.
I mean,
yes. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Cause I'm like, you did that. And they did that. But,
yeah, it boggles the mind that people can be so cruel to each other and so controlling of other people's lives when these are things that, I mean, I'll say it. When I put on my Instagram posts, I'll always say, reading is my safe space. Mm-hmm. Because it is. It's where I'm me. It's where I'm not just a mom or a friend or a victim or a partner. I'm just me.
Right. And when you read, and I know, see, I can't do the book, but I do the audible. I do the audio book. And I'm listening to these characters and I can relate to them. And I'm like, oh my gosh, yes. And then I get ideas from these characters and what they went through. And it's just really relatable how, you know, a person is being treated so poorly because they're the offspring of somebody they didn't like, or their social status, or their gender orientation, whatever it is, whatever the reason why they're being treated so badly. And then all of a sudden you have somebody that swoops in and says, you're not going to treat her no more. You're not going to mistreat her any ever again. And it's usually I read it in the shifter books, because I'm beginning to read about shifters and how they interact with each other. Excuse my ums, but it's really interesting. And you know, in my retelling of Snow White, she has a nanny, and the nanny is half human and half shifter. And when she befriends a shifter, a full shifter named Jargon, she learns about her shifter side. But yeah, I love reading. I love reading about fantasy. If I can listen to a book, that's my escape besides music. Going to another place in your mind, I think it's therapeutic and cathartic. And there are a lot of banned books out there, unfortunately, and it is based on LGBTQIA, which I don't understand. because we have an LGBTQ community, whether some people want to believe it or not. And they're not sinners. They are who they are.
I mean, speaking as like a parent, some people also try to use their kids as an excuse. Well, I don't want my kid to end up reading this. I don't want my kid to end up seeing this. I don't want them to be, you know, corrupted by the evil ways. And speaking as a parent, like, I don't really censor what my kids do or see or read or anything like that. Now, there may be things that are age inappropriate, like, I'm not going to let my daughter read actual, like, smut books, but if she has a question about something, I'm always going to be honest with her. Mm-hmm. And if she's curious about something, I'm not going to lie about it. And I don't understand why we need to protect our children from that. Honestly, she came home from school the other day and she actually had a question about puberty blockers. Mm. And I mean, she learned about it from school in sex ed.
Right.
And that is nothing that would have ever been uttered back in, you know, when I was in school. Our sex ed was like, they separated the boys and the girls.
Yep.
They barely told you anything and they sent you on your way. They gave you the mandatory like pads and called it a day. But like, my daughter saw a liner the other day and she goes, oh, that's a liner. And I was like, I would not have known that at 10. And I would not have asked for puberty blockers at 10. And I wouldn't have known about any of these things. And I actually applaud that. I would rather see more of that and more knowledge so that there are less mistakes in the world.
Absolutely. And I think if we were taught that, if adults when we were growing up, wouldn't be so scared of exposing children to, you know, anything that's pertaining to a sexual nature, then we would be more knowledgeable now. Now, this is my, or knowing it like from your peers or from the streets or from television, because television taught me about sex. Television taught me about kissing. You know, when I would look at the soap operas, television taught me about kissing. And I learned about, you know, sexuality when I look at the music videos and I would look at the soap operas. TV taught me that. There was no way that I could go to my mom and dad and ask them about sex. Because, first of all, I would have got popped in the mouth. And then got grounded for a whole week. So, ain't no way. Especially when I was a teenager. Now, my mother just automatically assumed that I was going to be a teen mom like her sister. And that never happened simply because I'm a teenager. I'm 13 years old. You just gonna assume that I'm gonna have sex with boys? Like, are you serious? Like, ain't like, I have in my neighborhood when I was growing up, I've seen girls my age pushing baby carriages, and they were not babysitting; these were their children, and that scared the shit out of me. I'm like, ain't no way nobody coming near me. I'm keeping my legs closed, and if chastity belts were available, you can best believe I'm wearing one. That's how I felt back then. Like, nobody is touching me. I'm not catching any diseases. I'm a baby myself. And then on top of that, the judgment of your family looking down on you. Oh, you're a kid having a kid. I grew up in a Catholic Caribbean household. And it was hell. And if you're a girl growing up in a Catholic Caribbean household, it is hell. Okay? I mean, you're just judged for for the stupidest things. Like if you're growing breasts, if your body is changing, and I got scrutinized for that. Oh, you're growing into an Amazon. Okay, well then that's what God intended to be. I didn't ask for this. Like, are you serious? But there was no way. But I am so glad that we are living in a society that we are more open with our kids, and we are especially when it comes to sexuality. And I think if we include sexuality in the curriculum as young as junior high, our children would be more knowledgeable, so that when they become adult, when they become parents, they can teach their children the right way about sex.
You know, speaking to that point, they actually start sex ed as young as kindergarten now.
And I think,
if you can believe that,
I think that's great. In fact, they have a show, in Sweden. I believe it's in Sweden, and they talk about, you know, the genitalia, female genitalia and male genitalia, in Sweden.
Yeah, it's not anything specific like that. My daughter's school, when she started in kindergarten, it was all about consent and good touch and bad touch. And they considered that sex ed, which I thought was amazing because it was empowering people to say, no, I don't want to hug that person.
Right.
Just because I'm related to them, I shouldn't have to hug them. I shouldn't have to let them give me a kiss on the cheek. I don't have to do any of those things. It's my body, and I can say no, even if they are a relative.
Right.
If I don't see them that often, or if I don't feel comfortable, I'm allowed to say no, which I think is amazing for them to have taught kids
right. When
they were five,
right.
Because we were never taught that.
No.
If someone wanted to give us a hug, we had to hug them.
Yeah. And I look,
you know,
I look back on that.
Yeah, or we were rude, or we had an attitude.
Yeah.
We got in so much trouble.
I know there's a lot of relatives that I did not feel comfortable hugging. And it was like I was forced to hug them. Well, that's your aunt. That's your cousin. Okay, well, I don't know this person. Just because we're related doesn't mean I gotta, like, hug them. And it just felt really uncomfortable, them touching me, you know what I'm saying? Or even calling aunt whoever, or uncle whoever. It just felt really uncomfortable. And I don't like the fact that parents force their children to do that. Like, and they'd be like, go hug your aunt. Like, I don't know this person, but, you know, you do it because you don't want to be disrespectful, and you don't want to hurt their feelings. Now, there was one time when I did tell my mother, I'm like, look, I don't feel comfortable I don't feel comfortable hugging this person. I don't feel comfortable. In fact, I didn't say anything. I did it with my actions. I basically did not hug this person. And then my mother confronted me and be like, you know, your aunt says that she feels bad when you don't hug her. I don't know her. I mean, what did you expect? Now you're going to force me to hug this chick?
I mean, they were teaching our kids now about having agency over their bodies. So why, as adults, do we not have agency over what we read? I mean, that's all we're talking about, is having control and agency and being able to say no and being able to say this is what we want and this is what we don't want.
Right. Absolutely. Abso-frickin-lutely. Now, if my daughter is 14 years old, if my daughter and if my daughter and I are in the bookstore and she wants a particular book that's for adults, I'm telling her to put that back because she doesn't know the content in that book. She's not psychologically, emotionally sophisticated to handle the content in that book. Now, I would say, well, you should get something that's age appropriate. But what do you think? What would you feel? How would you feel if your teenager came to you and said, "Hey, mom, I really like this book," and you see that this book is for adults and it has adult content? What would you do?
Honestly, the same as you. I mean, you get something age appropriate. I mean, I have fallen into the mistake of my daughter got a manga at one point, and it talked about being non-binary and finding out who you are. Mm-hmm. I didn't take into account that it also meant sexually. So I fell into the trap where my daughter started to read it, and then she asked me and my husband which one of us was the top and which was the bottom. I have since learned that if my daughter wants a book, I check the rating. Mm-hmm. I read it myself if I'm unsure. And then I answer. I don't just say okay anymore. So I mean, she's allowed to read like early young adult, like
right.
cutesy little things. They kiss and hold hands. But there are certain things, like, I would never let her read one of my dark romance. Never in a million years.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, when she gets older, sure, go ahead. But she is not at that point in her life where she could even understand where this is coming from or anything like that. So it's not, I don't think it's about, like, censoring or anything like that, but there are things that are age appropriate. Now, all of us who are reading these books are age appropriate. So them saying we shouldn't is kind of ridiculous. But if it's a child, then yeah, I can see not saying that. I can see saying, no, we're not going to let you read that. No, that's not acceptable.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I would... Here's the thing. I would allow my daughter to read Judy Blume books. And the reason why I will allow her to read Judy Blume books is because Judy Blume talks about children, but she talks about children that are going through some real life stuff, like Blubber and Dingy. These are kids that went through some real life stuff and it was puberty. It was emotional growing up, physical growing up, psychological growing up, and even spiritual growing up. I would allow my daughter to read that. I would allow my daughter to read stuff that's like you said, YA, age appropriate. But as for the books we read, oh no, that's too rich for their blood. No.
Yeah, that's a bit much.
Yeah.
Some of mine have two pages of trigger warnings. I'm going to say no on that one.
Oh, yeah.
When it ends with "your mental health matters."
Right.
I mean, the other thing is to restrict these books. They already come with warnings. Mm-hmm. And they come with plenty of warnings, and the authors are very careful and very honest about their content. And they say, if any of these are triggering situations for you, don't read this book.
Yeah. And I have
been. I don't think there's anyone out there who creates art more consciously of what would affect people than an author.
I totally agree. And you want to know what's so funny? Sydney Sheldon, Daniel Steele, and Jackie Collins never had trigger warnings in their books. I think their books, it was softcore porn. It was softcore. It was like, I guess you could say, it wasn't X-rated. It wasn't NC-17, but it was more like PG. If I guess you could say that, like, I think what I can say is that it didn't go, it just did the bumping and grinding and not the full penetration, and it didn't go, and it wasn't so colorful or metaphoric about it. Like, yes, he pulled her by her waist and ripped off her clothes and ravished her and, you know, stuff like that. That kind of material. That's more like softcore. Now, if you read books like Icebreaker, that makes Sidney Sheldon, Daniel Steele, and Jackie Collins tamed. Like, you know, really tamed.
Yeah, that would make them blush.
Oh, blush. It would make them blush, clutch their pearls. I don't know. But I will say that I thank them for being trailblazers as far as being taboo lit authors, because had it not been for them, we wouldn't be where we are now. And I want to say, as an author of taboo literature, on behalf of the taboo literature community, traditional and indie, I would like to thank you for reading our material.
I thank you guys for creating it, because, like I said, it really is everything that I need at the end of the day when you're done paying the bills and taking care of the kids and putting up with this attitude at school or that attitude at pickup or anything else. Going home and at the end of the day being able to immerse yourself in another world, and then a taboo one at that, mm-hmm. It is freeing. It makes you feel like there's still a part of you from when you were younger that's still alive. You're not all of you is just bills and responsibilities. There's that part of you that can let loose.
Absolutely. Like, it's that part of you that you have to keep hidden from the world, because the world will never understand that part of you. But when you open a book, that part of you has found its tribe. Like, yes, I'm home. Woohoo! You know? That's the part where you're actually free. And it's important that you don't keep that part of you locked in a cage or under the bed or hidden, because that part of you wants to be, they want to know the world. They want to explore the world. So it's important that we let that part of ourselves be free and not suppress it to the point that they are depressed.
Exactly.
Well, we are coming to an end of our show. That really, really sucks, because I was enjoying this conversation. But I would like to thank my guest, Brandy, for coming in and having this riveting conversation with me. Super riveting.
Thank you so much for inviting me and for letting me be a part of your world, and for writing the great novels that you write and short stories and everything else in between.
And I'm going to keep doing it till it's time for me to go home, if you know what I mean. But
and I will keep consuming it.
Before we go, I just want to make an announcement that, yes, I am a taboo lit author. And speaking of which, my book, The Pink Foxhole, is on Amazon.com. Pink Fox has, Fox has three X's, so you know it's taboo right off the bat. But yes, it is available on Amazon, on all markets, whether it's Canada, England, Australia, India, all markets, and especially the USA. So again, I would like to thank my host, Brandy, for coming in. And I thank you all for tuning in. This is the dirtiest pearl in the world, Aja Pearl, saying keep it safe, keep it consensual, and always keep it kinky. Enjoy.